Good afternoon, everyone. I would like to call to order our regular meeting this afternoon, June the 21st, 2023. Let's stand for the allegiance flag over here in the corner and a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
Thank God for rain.
Amen. Every time I put it in, I think I hear the grass going, go, go, go.
And flowers are just having the best time, yes. I need for us to adopt the agenda.
Madam Chair and members of the board, if you would be so inclined, would you be inclined to move tab I, the resolution recognizing Trey Robert Daniel House Connect, up after tab B? This way he doesn't have to wait towards the end of the meeting. I'm sure he really wants to do a civic duty and be here all day, but we'll get him out a little early.
Well, I need him to paddle.
Motion so made.
Second. All right, we have a motion by Mr. Sheridan, second by Mrs. Speaker, that we adopt the agenda presented. All in favor?
Aye.
And chair votes aye. Okay, so.
Madam Chair, first item up is a resolution honoring Cecil L. Cobb. And before, I think, you know, we do the photos, I just want the board to, I think you said you were going to read the resolution and then take action. And we'll do that for all three of the presentations.
Okay. So we want to do all three presentations. Okay. Sounds good. All right. We're going to come over this way.
No, I think what I was saying is the board should probably take action first before we do the...
On the resolution.
Yeah, on the resolution, right. Okay. On each individual item.
All right, yeah, let's do that, because at first we were reading and then coming back
yeah,
taking action.
This way we can take action first, right. And then Kate, then this yeah. Lease here can get everything marked
okay.
Up and all
and
official.
Yeah. All right, we have a motion for the resolution for Cecil Cobb. Someone made
that. Do you want to read that first?
No.
You can read it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Not to the motion. I move the Board of Supervisors adopt a resolution honoring Cecil Lewis Cobb.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. We have a motion by Mr. Sheridan, second by Mr. Fairchild. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Votes aye. And then we have.
And then I've got the resolution up. So do you want to do each one individually for each person?
Yes.
You want to read it?
Yes, please. Okay, we have the first one for Cecil Cobb. So let's all of us come down. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you tell me what to do?
Yes. Okay. It's good to have our backs against it. Audience, yeah. There's some way there. That's right. Good. All right, this is a resolution honoring Cecil Lewis Cobb. Whereas Cecil Lewis Cobb, Guyana County native son, after 68 full and fruitful years, departed this life on January the 31st, 2023. And whereas Mr. Cobb was, among many other things, a business owner, volunteer firefighter, a coach, an advocate of environmental protection and rural preservation. And whereas in 1996, Mr. Cobb was elected to the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors, serving as chair of the board for 6 of the 12 years he held office. And whereas during his tenure as Fort Union District Supervisor, Mr. Cobb served as County Director of Emergency Services, was a member of the Fluvanna County Local Emergency Planning Committee, the Fort Union Sanitary District Advisory Board, the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board, the Economic Development Commission, the Landfill Advisory Committee and the Fluvanna County Fire and Rescue Steering Committee. And whereas as a member of the steering committees for a new county courthouse, the Paramount Firehouse, and a public safety building, Mr. Carr was instrumental in numerous improvements to county infrastructure and services. Mr. Carr was also supportive of a new county library at the Fluvanna County High School at Pleasantville. And whereas Mr. Carr never tired of looking for ways to help the community, supporting the creation of the Heritage Trail and recreational facilities for county residents, including the baseball, softball, and soccer fields at Pleasant Grove. And whereas with humor and a ready smile, Mr. Carr was a fruitful and engaged public servant. Now, therefore, be it resolved on this 21st day of June, 2023, that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors, with respect and gratitude, does posthumously recognize Cecil Lewis Carr for his dedicated service, compassionate leadership, and many contributions to the county and the people he called it home. He will be missed. Be it further resolved, the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors extends its sympathy to the family of Cecil Lewis Carr and decree that the family will be furnished a copy of this resolution. The foregoing resolution was duly and regularly adopted by the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors on the 21st day of June, 2023. And we had it all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So much.
Yes. Next resolution, Attorney Payne.
I move the Board of Supervisors adopt a resolution recognizing and honoring the retirement of Frederick W. Payne, County Attorney. Second.
All right. We have a motion by Mr. Fairchild and a second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. All right, Mr. Payne, it's your time. Resolution recognizing and honoring the service and retirement of Frederick W. Payne. Whereas Frederick W. Payne is most highly esteemed by his peers and colleagues as a consummate professional and gentleman. And whereas Mr. Payne did complete his undergraduate years at Yale University, and upon whom his Juris Doctor was confirmed by the University of Virginia School of Law. And whereas Mr. Payne became a member of the Virginia Bar Association in 1974, focusing his legal career in local government, real estate, land use, zoning, and title law. And whereas Mr. Payne was appointed in 1985 by the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors. And whereas Mr. Payne has offered his knowledge and counsel to the Fluvanna County Planning Commission, the Board of Supervisors, constitutional officers, and the staff of Fluvanna County. And whereas Mr. Pan has served with honor and dignity for more than 37 years. And whereas Mr. Payne and his wife Caroline, longtime residents of the city of Charlottesville, moved home to Fulton County in January 2018. And whereas Mr. Payne will soon retire from public service, therefore be it resolved that the Fulton County Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize the contributions and professionalism of Frederick W. Payne to this body and this community. The board offers its sincere gratitude for his many years of service and wishes him a long and happy retirement. The foregoing resolution was duly regularly adopted by the Fulton County Board of Supervisors at the regular meeting of the board held on the 21st day of June 2020.
And then just one other, one additional plaque, Mr. Payne, congratulations on your retirement. Frederick W. Payne Esquire, Fulton County Attorney, December 2nd, 1985 through June 30th, 2023. With gratitude and deepest appreciation for over 37 years of dedicated service to the County of Fulton. Best wishes for a long and happy retirement. Fulton County Board of Supervisors, Fulton County, Virginia. We are glad you will stay a resident of Fulton County, and you've been a pleasure to work with, sir.
I'm glad to remain a resident.
Okay. I get two thoughts. When you said the date that he was hired, I know it's been a while. It's only 2 years after I graduated from high school. And the second one is, we better all say a prayer for every turkey living within you.
I know that Mr. Payne has always said when my husband was on the board that he made the motion for them to hire him. So you don't have to deal with any more bookers anymore. I'm leaving with you. But I love Lane.
You could say you've been Booker Dad. It's been an honor serving you.
All right. We are getting our steps and our up and downs today here.
Yes, good exercise.
Oops. We're sitting down.
And
let me pull up. There we go. And you've got a copy of the resolution there.
Yes, I do. Yes, we have a resolution here for Robert Daniel House Connect. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Trey. His first name is Trey.
Ray, first name Trey. Okay. Would you come home? Make the motion.
I move the Fulton County Board of Supervisors adopt the resolution entitled Recognizing Trey Robert Daniel House Connect for Award of Eagle Scouts Status.
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Ms. Eager and a second by Mr. Brand. All in favor?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. And I think, Mrs. Eager, you presented this on Saturday, and it went over to the church, too. So you can sign up. Okay. We have our resolution recognizing Trey Robert Daniel House Connect. Award of Eagle Scout Status. Whereas the Boy Scouts of America was incorporated by Mr. William B. Boyce on February 8, 1910, and whereas the Boy Scouts of America was founded to promote citizenship, training, personal development, and fitness of individuals. And whereas Trey Robert Daniel House Connect has completed all the requirements of becoming an Eagle Scout. And whereas Trey has been examined by an Eagle Scout Board of Review and deemed worthy of the Eagle Scout Award. And whereas Boy Scout Troop 156 convened an Eagle Scout Court of Honor on June 17, 2023 at 2 o'clock p.m. at Effort Baptist Church, Palmyra, Virginia. And whereas the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors fully supports the programs of the Boy Scouts of America and recognizes the important services they provide to the youth of our county. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors joins Trey's family and friends in congratulating him on his achievements, the award of Eagle Scout status, and acknowledges the good fortune of the county to have such an outstanding young man as one of its citizens. The foregoing resolution was adopted and regularly adopted. The resolution was duly and regularly adopted by the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors at their regular meeting, 21st of June, 2023. And we will have your period. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Trey.
Some modesty.
It's quick.
Do we want mom and dad?
Mom and dad, yes.
Sure. By the way, that's what you call fleeing.
All right, y'all got to squish a little bit.
Okay. Do you, can you get this to Kelly? Okay.
So we need your phone?
All right.
Thank you, Grace.
Congratulations.
Madam Chair, members of the board, got a few things to report on. So one, we've got a new employee starting, Mallory Higginbotham, started with the Department of Social Services as a Family Services Specialist 1. She started on June 12th. And then again at the library, summer reading is off to a great start. They had over 360 people that came to see the mini Mangeray Petting Zoo and Farm.
Menagerie.
What's that?
Menagerie.
Menagerie Petting Zoo and Farm Crafts. Thank you, Galen.
It's like you might not have that word.
And then Taiko Japanese Drumming was a loud show with over 120 people. And then the library also had several workshops for all ages and fun. Tie-dye, moon-beaded wind chimes, and cardboard box drive-in, a movie, and more. Again, in this building, Ms. Hoffman does lots of great things, lots of great programs, especially during the summer and just yeah. In general.
And I was there for the drumming. Quite
were you?
Yeah.
Was it, it was pretty vigorous?
Yes.
So again, want to welcome a new business, Rivanna River Company in Fluvanna County. They're kind of teaming up and they're setting up shop kind of in the EW Thomas parking lot there. And so on June 10th, Rivanna River Company launched their first trip down the Rivanna River in Fluvanna County. I'm sure after this last couple days, they'll be a lot happier to see what's going on the Rivanna. I went down it on Saturday and it was more of a walk than a paddle. So. Patrons for this first trip met at E.W. Thomas's and were shuttled to the Crofton boat ramp to begin their 6.5-mile trip to the Palmyra boat landing. Rivanna River Company staff were on site to collect kayaks and equipment, and there are just some pictures of their bus, the kayaks, and just kind of going along. We had a couple staff members that signed up to go down the trip as well on, what was it, a couple Saturdays ago?
Yeah.
So, like I said, welcome. Like to welcome them to Fluvanna.
Do they have life jackets too?
That's the red that's on the
back. Where
yeah.
is it?
Yeah,
look at the back.
Yeah, you see right there. They have life jackets.
Oh, I
yeah.
see. Yep. Yeah. Okay.
And then spotlight on business, the Palmyra Arts Fest was held June 10th from 10 to 4 p.m. and the Palmyra Village record turnout was reported. 538 attendees, 25 local artisans, 3 food trucks, 2 musicians, and Fluvanna Library handed out free crafts and craft kits. Again, another successful Palmyra Arts Festival in the village of Palmyra. And just some upcoming board meetings. So July 5th, remember we only have one meeting in July, and that's going to be July 5th. We'll have a 5 p.m. meeting, and then at 7 p.m. we'll have a meeting, and we'll have a little closed session in between those times, try and break out at about 6:30. And that, again, will be here in the library. Back in August, we'll be back at the Performing Arts Center, August 2nd at 5 p.m., and then August 16th at, actually, that should be August 16th at 7 p.m. August 2nd at 5 p.m., August 16th at 7 p.m. at the Performing Arts Center. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
I've got a quick question.
Sure.
We've got some stuff going on down at Pleasant Grove. What's going on down there?
Oh, they're putting up the lights in all the fields. I'm assuming that's what you're seeing. Yep.
And I just saw cut some trucks down there. I didn't know if it was what it was, lights.
Yep. Lights got delivered today.
Yep. Yep. Lights got delivered. So they're going to begin that project, get all the lights up on the multi-purpose field and then the softball field. Yep.
Great.
Killing these balls.
Getting some 13 and over baseball in the guy in the baseball field.
Okay.
We'll work on the baseball fields next.
All right, thank you for your report. Next, I would like to open up our first public comments. If anyone would like to speak to the board, please come to the lectern here and give your name and address. You have 5 minutes. Anyone would like to speak? Anyone online or on call in? Okay, if not, I will close the first public comments.
Oops.
Okay. We do have a public hearing this afternoon, and I would like to read the purpose and et cetera, Mr. Miles. The purpose of a public hearing is to receive testimony from the public on certain resolution, ordinances, or amendments prior to taking action. A hearing is not a dialogue or debate. Its express purpose is to receive additional facts, comments, and opinions on the subject items. Speakers. Speakers should approach the lectern so they may be visible and audible to the board. Each speaker shall clearly state his or her name and address. All comments shall be directed to the board. All questions should be directed to the chairperson. Members of the board are not expected to respond to questions or respond to questions should be made at the chairman's discretion. Speakers are encouraged to contact staff regarding unresolved concerns or to receive additional information. Speakers with questions are encouraged to call county staff prior to the public hearing. Speakers should be brief and avoid repetition and previously presented comments. Action. At the conclusion of the public hearing on each item, the chairperson will close the public hearing. The board will proceed with its deliberation and will act on or formally postpone action on such item prior to proceeding to other agenda items. Further public comment after the public hearing has been closed generally will not be permitted. So now we have Mr. Douglas Miles, Director of Community Development.
Yes, good evening, members of the board, public. So this is a zoning case request we've worked on for quite a while, and really proud to bring it forward before you all tonight. So it is ZMP 2302, Renaud Consulting. It's a rezoning request to conditionally rezone from A1 Agricultural General and I1, small portion of I1 Industrial Limited, to the B1 Business general zoning district with respect to 4.7 plus or minus acres of several tax map numbers. Tax map 5, section A, parcels 48, 51, and part of 52, and part of 53. Tax map 5A, section 1, parcel L2, and tax map 5A, section 2, parcels L1 and L1A. The subject properties are located in the southwest quadrant of Richmond Road, Route 250, and James Madison Highway, Route 15, in the Zion Crossroads Community Planning Area and the Columbia Election District. So this is the actual gateway into our county, at, right there at 250 and 15, just past the water storage tank. So at the April 27th community meeting, Kimberly Horn went over some, and along with the land use attorney, went over what they've done up to that point in the meeting. They completed the December 2022 TIA, the traffic impact analysis for this project location. The applicant plans to make improvements mainly to Route 15 relative to VDOT's warranted turn lanes and prescribed VDOT improvements for the new uses. Out on Route 250, there's already an existing right turn lane into the property. Worked really, really well with the applicant and the land use attorney on proffered new building elevations to include brick and manufactured stone materials. These are a lot of the things that we've been talking about working on the Zion Crossroads Gateway Plan. And so this is really the first kind of test of some of those things. They also, throughout the process, were in agreement with removing, which we'll show in a minute, some of the white doors and trim to be more earth tone colors. So we were trying to work with them and strive more to be like rural commercial as opposed to just suburban. And you'll see that the Wawa design, the doors and some of the posts and columns originally were white, and now they're clad in that stone veneer and have more like a brown rather than stark white, gloss white kind of building door designs. And then as we've been doing quite throughout 2022 and 2023, the Wawa landscaping plan specifically meets all the zoning ordinance requirements as they relate to screening the parking areas from public rights-of-ways with high-quality shade trees, ornamental shrubs, and materials to retain a more rural, suburban commercial design. Dumpsters and recycling enclosure area would be screened by materials compatible with that principal structure. So a lot of times, constructing the main Wawa store, they'll use the same materials for that enclosure, and it matches quite well. And then, as we said, it's a welcoming gateway site design via the landscaping screening and architectural building elevations as you enter into Flavanna County. So we're quite proud to be working with them on this project. This is the dumpster enclosure on your right-hand side, and then your gas canopy. And again, you can see throughout the columns and posts are all clad and covered in the same materials that you saw in the building earlier. Some of the proffered out uses that the land use attorney worked with us on was a lot of the things such as shelter care facilities, some assisted living facilities, other types of uses that are really not key to being right at a gateway entrance. And then obviously some of the adult uses and other type of outdoor related railroad facilities are just not suitable for this parcel or this area. So those have been proffered out. And the next slide shows you all the uses that could be here on the property. Daycare center, bank, pharmacy with drive-through lanes, their gas station, use medical outpatient type offices, retail stores, including stores and delis for the exact Wawa site design. And then other additional newer uses are also added, like bakeries, brew pubs, corporate offices, and such. So there's a lot of economic development planning and work to keep a lot of the uses on the site for any future uses that, there's also other parts, another parcel that's on part of this project. So in compliance with the Zion Crossroads Community Plan, it states in the actual plan that Zion Crossroads area is poised to become the new center of an industry and commerce for Flavanna County. So this location in relation to the new site infrastructure and road improvements right there at the intersection of 250 and Route 15 makes logical sense for business uses. The proposed construction of this Wawa convenience store and other out parcel type uses are consistent in compliance with the 2015 comp plan. Along with the applicant's proper conditions, there would be a new welcoming gateway into Flavanna County. And the Planning Commission at the Planning Commission meeting, they recommended approval along with the applicant's state of proper conditions. And I was speaking right before the meeting with Daniel Cosby and folks, the attorney and the engineer for the project. This is probably the best graphic we could see tonight because there was a fair amount of discussion about at the Planning Commission, just inquisitively, about how that current Tabor lane, when you come into the county, goes down to one. And so all of those lanes are being constructed by the applicant. And creating a very nice entrance in with a right turn taper lane, other pass-through lanes. And then also as you're heading from Palmyra up to this entrance, you have a left turn lane that will allow you to get in. So a lot of the entrance and exit into the Wawa will be in Flavanna County. The other one, as Eric showed you there, is already available for people coming from the Charlottesville area down 250. So this is a very well thought out, well designed project and creates some very good infrastructure for us here right as you come into Flavanna County. So at this point, I can turn it over to Ms. Cosby. She has a few slides to go over with you as well.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board. I am Annie Cosby, and I am a land use attorney at Wire Gill, and I'm here tonight representing Renault Consulting. With me tonight is Ryan Perkins with Kimley Horn, the engineer, and we also, I believe, have Mark Fontaine on the line. He is the director of development with Renault for this area and for the Wawa development group. So hopefully between all of us, if you have questions, we can answer those questions. Mr. Miles has just been terrific to work with and his staff, and Ms. Schmack has been really terrific, and so we appreciate staff's assistance with this application, and I appreciate his presentation because now I don't have too much to do, and I know it's really wet outside and rain's good, but I don't, we're not ducks and probably want to go home. And so I will try to get through with that, the presentation without being too repetitive, but we are requesting the rezoning of this 4.7 acres to B1 so that it can all sort of be developed comprehensively. A portion of the property, 2.5 acres, will actually be developed as the Wawa development plan. The rest of the acreage will be held for future development. So it will be zoned B1 and it will be subject to the proffers that Mr. Miles touched on. So there will be uses that it can't, you know, it can't be used for, but it will be development ready, again, for those out parcel uses for whatever use might be appropriate. And if it's subject to a special exception, of course, that would come before the board. So I just wanted to be clear that the Wawa will be a part of the development, and I'll show you the site plan, but the remainder will be, you know, it's just available in that corridor. Here is, again, sort of a slightly higher aerial. So there's the parcel right there, and you can see Route 15 going, it's a sideways slide, but you know, going north and south, and then 250 east and west. So there's the site. A little bit closer, outlined in red, that's the Wawa site. And then the blue will be the, you know, the out parcel site. So it would, it's part of the rezoning to be one, but it doesn't have a development plan as of yet. That would go through, again, additional legislative process if that's necessary, and certainly administrative site plan approval and such. So that's the ask for this application. The next slide, again, the same thing. It's just showing you sort of the dimensions of those two parcels. And then the next slide is, this is, hopefully you can see that. You have it in front of you. But this is the site plan and the landscaping plan for the Wawa site. So, you can see this is the developed portion, and then the non-developed portion that would just be B1. But as Mr. Miles indicated, there's the building that's centrally located, and the gas service area over the canopy, and then the landscaping that is surrounding the entire site, and particularly along Route 15. And so again, we were talking through this development process about the county's robust landscaping requirements, and so we worked very hard and worked with staff to make sure that we were satisfying those requirements in an appropriate way. So we worked very hard on maintaining clear access, landscaping, and site design, and I'll show you the elevation. So again, being very intentional about trying to keep that rural feel for this development, even for, a Wawa gas station and convenience center. We really tried to be respectful of, where this is located, in Fluvanna County. So this is the original elevations, as Mr. Miles talked about, and we worked very hard to, try to use the materials, the river rock and the brick, again, to try to be consistent with, a rural feel. And we received comments back originally that said, well, that's good, but can you do even better? Can you put more river rock? Can you, take away, as Mr. Miles mentioned, some of the stark white doors and, maybe dress it up a little bit with some additional signage? And so we took that very seriously. We went back with the architects and came out with an updated design, which is the next slide, which it's kind of hard to tell, but the columns in the front, instead of the white columns, are all now that river rock, so that they've got, more of that natural feel. The white doors are gone, and now it's earth tone brown. Again, really trying to sort of keep with the rural nature. There's some additional signage on the Route 15 side of the building, so that it's not just, just the side of a building. So we listened, and, we tried to do, what we can do, and we were saying that there's a new Wawa that's in Charlottesville that was held to some pretty high standards, but this one is even, higher standards than the one in Charlottesville. So as far as the, some of the design criteria. So we worked hard to make this a really good looking building. This is what the canopy and the gas pumps would look like. And again, using that same type of material to be consistent and with the building, and also fit in with the area itself. So the Wawa use itself is, I think most people are familiar with the Wawa, but this building would be approximately 6,000 square feet. There'd be 9 fuel tanks, that's what's shown under that canopy. Open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. It has the two access points that you saw on the site plan, in which Mr. Miles mentioned the one coming in from 250, which is the existing access. It has a right turn in. We would be doing some improvements to the left turn in. And then he showed you, and the slide is coming again, the improvements on Route 15. So substantial improvements to that area. And then also the landscaping and elevations, which are proffered to be consistent with the plans that we've just shown. And again, certain uses that would otherwise be allowed in B1 have been proffered out, including public recreation, adult uses, assisted living. You can see, what those are, and those are consistent with what other uses have been proffered out. We understand for the B1 area, we work with staff to say, what is it that, that the county has not wanted to see in B1 for other uses, and so we took as many as we could, and we tried to be consistent with that, so you wouldn't have to reinvent the wheel. And then again, the Wawa would be developed in general conformance with the concept plans, the landscaping plans, and the elevations. So again, we're wanting to make sure, you know, what you see is what you get. Transportation, I can touch on, and again, Brian is here if you have questions, and Mr. Miles mentioned it, the traffic study was sent to VDOT in December. It has been approved. The existing eastbound right turn lane on 250 will serve as it is. The westbound turn lane is proposed on 250, and then we've talked about the north and southbound lanes and the through lanes coming on Route 15. All of the proposed driveway locations meet VDOT excess management spacing, and no other off-site improvements will be required. So it will be very site specific, and then again, particularly on Route 15. So here again is that the graphic showing the orange, you know, are the two southbound through lanes, you know, and then the one becomes the dedicated right in to the site. The blue is coming coming from the other direction, and then the green is actually the median. So, yeah? I'm looking to Ryan if there's anything I've missed. One of the questions that did come up from the Planning Commission was sort of the shortish merge from when you cross over 250, and the concern that now, and my family lives right down the road here, so I know exactly what she's talking about. Crossing over and then people trying to scoot around each other very quickly to try to get in front of, you know, the other car before it turns into a single lane. And, you know, what, you know, would that be alleviated by this development? And in fact, there will be, you know, much wider and longer lanes. And in fact, the increased length of timing to merge into that single lane is 300 more feet than what you have now. That's, you know, specifically much longer and obviously much wider. So we wanted to make sure you had that information, because that was a question that had come up to the Planning Commission. So economic development, the store is anticipated to have approximately 50 employees, and of course would be a revenue generator for the county and real estate property taxes, and has minimal impact on county services. So we think it is a great partnership with the county. Mr. Miles discussed the conformance with the comprehensive plan, and this is in our application, but the commercial and industrial growth obviously is anticipated to be centered right around Zion Crossroads, and there's language from the comp plan that this area in particular is ideally situated to attract a development like this. So I'm not going to read that. You know your comprehensive plan far better than I do. I just am glad to be able to bring this project forward. We think it's a great project and it's a good fit for the county, and we've worked really hard with just really great staff to bring this forward. So we're happy to answer any questions. And
any questions from the board?
Yes. Could you go back to the picture of the right there?
Yes.
Where you have the pumps for the gas. What is that, the black area? What is that?
Underground tanks, I'm guessing.
Oh, okay. I didn't know what that was. Are there going to be any charging stations for electric cars?
That's a great question. And it was one that also had come up. And I think that the answer is it will, there are different agreements with different types of manufacturers, mm-hmm. you know, but when the site is built, it will be built in a way that it can accommodate
later
EV vehicles. So if those contracts come forward, it will be ready to go without further development. Yes.
It might have been said, I might have missed it. A lot comes up these days about, for lack of a better term, uplighting or downlighting, the control of where the lighting is going. It's not,
right.
There's a term. Right. Is there mindfulness in the type of lighting we have here, that it's all facing down? And
sure. I would say in addition to a robust landscaping ordinance, Louisiana has a very robust lighting ordinance. And so we will need to comply with all of the requirements of the landscaping ordinance, which speak to downward facing lighting. We don't have any additional proffers in there, but I believe, if you want to speak to that, yes. it is required to comply with that lighting pursuant to the ordinance.
Yes, sir. Mr. Fairchild, we do have recessed lighting up in the gas canopy area, so that even if you're approaching the traffic light, you know, at night to the store, the lighting would be recessed. But it's very bright downward to the light of the pumps. But the perimeter, you can't have any greater than 1 foot candle at the property line. So, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
A citizen emailed the concern about 24 hours and said something 24-hour operation, and mentioned that not all Wawa's are 24-hour, and therefore basically saying, so it doesn't have to be. I understand if you generate it, you want to be there to generate the revenue. But in case that citizen happens to be listening, do you have any clue what portion of Wawa's do operate 24-hour and which ones don't?
I do not. Mark Fontaine is on the line. I know he may be a little bit spotty with his internet. I don't, but I can say that the current model, you know, for the Wawa's is 24/7.
And Mark unmuted online.
Okay, there.
Yeah.
Yes, Mark.
I can speak to that.
Thank you.
Wawa will not do a. And they're like this without being
24/7. Missed a piece.
Mark, we missed one piece. If you can say it again.
I'm in an area where the Wi-Fi is pretty bad. In an area like this, there are certain areas where I can't speak for Wawa, but I can tell you that this needs to be a 24/7 location to have it open, to make it profitable. So it is definitely a requirement, and it is a lease requirement that I have with Wawa to make sure this is 24/7.
Okay.
So this model, the different models, Wawa does different models. This particular model needs to be 24/7, but it doesn't, and I understand, I wouldn't expect you to have that off the cuff, but it doesn't necessarily, it doesn't go to say what percentage of them are 24/7. Plenty aren't, from what I imagine. But this particular design does.
Like design and location.
I think it's probably more location is what I understand.
Yeah.
Right.
It's meant to be more of an amenity than anything else. So your firefighters, your police officers, your nurses are able to have these services available to them 24/7. That's the idea.
Okay, do we have any other questions?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, Mr. Sheriff.
I've got one. When you first came to us, I know you've had to back it up a little bit with in regards to the area on the parcel, but you had in your original plans parking so that anyone that wished to visit the cemetery could utilize the parking. Would they still be able to utilize the parking here? Would y'all have any issues if somebody, a family member, wanted to come visit a grave because there's a whole, not very much parking in front? If they use the Wawa parking, you're talking 5 people a year.
I defer to Mark, but I'm pretty sure the answer is that's not a problem.
I just wanted to make sure. I had someone bring that up to me.
Yes, sir.
Because I had said y'all had planned on putting a few spaces. I don't know if that's, if Mark, if you're listening, I don't know if that one picture around the dumpster, if you could put like 2 parking spaces maybe there. If not, if they could use the public parking there at the store.
What we've purposely done is on the very front, if you notice that screen we're looking at right now in the yellow, that incorporates where the cemetery is. Mm-hmm. And that front portion there is accessible parking, which is what they're using now to access the cemetery.
Okay, so you're just gonna leave that up there on the front?
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I will now open the public comments. Anyone who would like to make the comment, please come forward and give your name and address and speak to us. We have 5 minutes. Anyone would like to speak to this project? Anyone online?
don't, Madam Chair, I don't see anyone. Well, let me see. Hold on. There's a Stephen McCray that's unmuted, but I'm not sure if they're wanting to make a comment.
He's not showing unmuted online.
No, okay. Never mind. Okay. With me. He's with you. Oh. All right. So I'm going to assume not at this point.
All right. Okay. Then I will close the public comment and we'll come back to the board for discussion. All right, board members? We'd like to acknowledge we did get an email from a person.
I think that's what Mr. Fairchild was referencing.
Yeah, he talked about one part that she, they had missed two people.
I think one thing that they discussed was a concern they had was the 24-hour piece versus not. And I think that the other one, they said something about a truck terminal and talking about since the other parcel didn't have a final development plan. One, I don't know if there's any space to do a truck terminal there from an acreage standpoint, but I think it's, is that proffered out, or is it?
I don't even think it's allowed.
I don't think it's allowed anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a I-1 or I-2. So.
And then it was something about if it had a spill or accident, it would take 45 minutes for someone to get
The comments had made mention that there was delays in getting spills or anything like that up in that area because there's no fire company that is located right around that place.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what...
Company 7 is within a half a mile or a mile.
Yeah, and that's right in Louisa.
It's right across from BioCat.
Yeah.
Right.
If you're familiar with where BioCat sits, Company 7's a quarter of a mile down that road.
Right.
And as far as the... Yes, it's the most, it's probably, except for Scottsville, the furthest place for flu vaccine to get to. But the lake and Bellmire are both within 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they did take a lot of time to write that, and they were, you know, they had a lot of concerns in there. So I think we've kind of addressed those that they had in their email. And I hope that they're online and they can hear it.
I know that there's a lot of enthusiasm from the community for the Wawa to come. Given that the boards, many multiple boards, have worked so hard to develop Zion's Crossroads and get to this point, I just want to say I can't think of a better partner for us to start off with than Wawa, and we're really excited to have them here. At least that's my perception. So, so thank you.
Did y'all have anything else y'all want to say? It's okay with you, Madam Chair?
Yes.
It's in my area.
Yes.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve ZNP 2302, a rezoning request to conditionally rezone from A1 Agricultural General and I1 Industrial Limited to the B1 Business General Zoning District with respect to 4.7 plus or minus acres of Tax Map 5, Section A, Parcels 48, 51, Part of 52, and Part of 53. Tax Map 5A, Section 1, Parcel L2, and Tax Map 5A, Section 2, Parcels 1A and 1L1 and L1A, along with the proffers dated April
3rd, 2023. Second. All right. A motion by Mr. Sheridan, the second by Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Chair votes aye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wow.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay, we will move on. We don't have any action items nor appointments. We have presentations. First one is Deep Sheriff's Office Recruitment, Retention, and Salary Increase. Sheriff Hassett.
Good evening, Madam Chair, Board. Thank you for the opportunity to come talk to you tonight about a very important issue. Not only with our agency, but throughout the state, which is recruitment and retention of officers throughout the state and throughout the country. I'd also like to thank you all. The board has been very generous to the Sheriff's Office, as well as county employees and the schools in the last year to deal with this out, which is an important issue throughout the country. First slide, please. So the, kind of wanted to give you an overview real quick. The sheriff's office, we run the courts and civil process. There are 7 full-time deputies assigned to the courts and 3 part-time deputies. They help in their mix of things. Some days during the week, we have 2 courts going, which they have increased over the last couple of years, which you gave deputy year for specifically for the courts. And the 3 part-time we've lost. Since then, we've lost 1 part-time person. We'll start advertising for that person. They actually moved full-time, which helped us out a great deal. School resource officers, we picked up the 2 from the grant last year and 1 from the grant 3 years before. We have those grants in play for this upcoming 24 fiscal year again. So we'll have the 5 resource officers. We have 1 evidence person that does our evidence and also helps with civil process. And actually this person, the person we have in this position is fixing to retire. Patrol division, we have a total of 20 deputies and supervisors in there. Investigations, we have 5. Animal control, we have 1 amazing animal control officer, Ben. She is the hardest working person in the agency. Mm-hmm. She really handles it all. We have 4 other deputies that are trained in animal control. There's an extra vehicle there, and when she's off and there's a call, somebody's about to go take care of her. In the reserves, we have 25 reserves that come in from the south. Next slide, please. So difference, I know most of you didn't know it, but I'll highlight it. We have a certified applicant, which is certified through the Department of Criminal Justice Services via law enforcement officer. You have a non-certified applicant, which is a person who has never achieved certification in law enforcement in the state of Virginia, which you have to be certified in order to work. Next slide, please. Surrounding agencies around us, we did our research. Louisa County is going to 56,000 starting July 1. Goochland County is going to 56,250. Charlottesville PD is currently at 50,065. They have a $6,000 non-certified sign-on bonus, a $12,000 sign-on bonus if you're certified. Orange County is a kind of a, they just did a pay study the year after we did, and they really do a great job of recruiting people that are certified, because you see they're between 50 and 70, depending on how many years of service you have. They bring you right up to speed of your years of service. The UVA, probably our biggest competition, $56,000 and $8,000 sign-on bonus for not being certified, $15,000 if you're certified. Alamar County is currently at $51,000. I just heard the other day, they did add a $5,000 sign-on bonus to their agency, and they have a 6% of whatever their salary is, shift differential, if you work on patrol. The state police came out with a brand new one today. We didn't have time to put that one on there, but theirs is starting 55,427. Get a $5,000 sign-on bonus and a pay raise within the first 12 months of completing the academy. So these are kind of the agencies that we are competing with. Last year, we had a generous pay raise as well as a pay scale adjustment with the pay study. And this year we're getting the state as well as the county giving very generous raises. But what we haven't done is we haven't raised our starting salaries to be competitive. Next slide, please. So throughout, I wish I had some more clear numbers. I know the state police are currently probably around 200 down. The city of Charlottesville is 30 down. There's not an agency that I know of in the state that is 100%. In the 16 some years that I've been here, we were 100% twice, and for a very short period of time. The extremely limited applicant pool, people are not wanting to work weekends. They don't want to work holidays. And surprisingly enough, the biggest, especially in dispatch, is people do not want to work at night. So we're losing potential candidates, but what we're seeing, we had one that was certified that was we had already done background on, and then when they came out with the new Charlottesville, you know, he said, "That is basically my down payment on my house." You know? So, I mean, what can you say with young people? Everybody wants to have a family and have a home, a next life. We have a lack of qualified applicants. Currently, we have one applicant. And we certainly don't want to get to the point that we hire the second string candidates. And we want to have qualified deputies and we don't want to lose our qualified deputies to other agencies for higher pay and bonuses. Next slide, please. So basically what we're asking for, currently our certified final and bonus to $7,500. Non-certified, which we don't have a bonus for that one right now, but we'd like that to be gone to raise that to 4,000. Double the shift differential, which currently we're giving those patrol deputies 1,100, and bring that up to 2,200. And then move our starting salary for certified deputies to 52.5, non-certified to 49.5. We're still behind others, but what I want you to keep in mind in that last paragraph, if you look at it, remember we work 12-hour shift. All those other agencies, they work 80 hours in a two-week period. We work 2 weeks more a year than they do when you do the hours. So that's something that I wanted to bring to your attention. So this is basically—
Yes, and that's just the salary, right?
Yes.
So even a new deputy at the lowest pay level is salaried.
It's an hourly rate.
No, it's hourly. So
an hourly rate.
So they're making, although they're working more within the year, they're making more because they say
if you come on at 52.5 and you were in Alamar County and you were at 52.5, you're going to work two more weeks here to get that
52.5. Oh, to get the same. I got you.
Yes. Any other questions or concerns that you have? Currently, we are short two full-time positions. You're graciously giving us another in July 1, and we currently have four deputies out on a variety of medical leave. So right now we're operating six short. Yesterday was probably one of the busiest days we've had in a while. And you know it gets bad when they got the old man is next up to bat. I'm glad there wasn't another call. But our calls for service are picking up. Like I say, the biggest thing is the competition among agencies to get the few qualified people that are out there. Any other questions or anything?
Does the service calls pick up in the summertime?
Yes, ma'am. They will. You'll get a lot of the crimes that happen at the beginning of the summer. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, a lot of petty larcenies, thefts from motor vehicles, vandalism. But yesterday's busy day was a domestic assault that was pretty serious. Then we had, at the same time, within 6 hours, we had two mental health calls, which we had to call one person in to help with that mental health call. We will be coming to the board here as soon as the pilot program is finished at UVA. They created in the new hospital a special unit to handle the mental health patients, and they've done an excellent job. And we're in a beta testing right now, and we're part of that. And we're going to bring that to you as soon as they complete that and get all the final, this is how we're going to do business. But it looks like in the future, we will be able to take someone to UVA and we'll be able to leave them in their custody and they will take care of them. Instead of us sitting there with them in the last year or two, we've done over 24 hours sometimes. Mm-hmm. And when you look at my overtime budget, you say, what happened? Where'd all that overtime, I would say a third of it at least is mental health. Mm-hmm. And the young people, the amount of juveniles that we've helped with mental health issues this year has increased significantly.
What's going to stop deputies from bonus hunting, if you would?
We try to create a family atmosphere in our community. Just like I've told you all many times, I try to get most of my deputies that are starting families. They live here in the county, to be a part of that, to me, is what makes us unique. If you live here and you work in Alamar County, you cannot leave Alamar County to come by your house and have lunch, or go to school and have lunch with your child, or stop by the ball game that they're having at the school. You still got your walkie in your hand, you can still jump in your car, and you can still answer that call. And that's one of the unique things. Everybody has take-home cars. That used to be, back in the day, it's one of the things that was very attractive, you know, that you were able to have a take-home car.
So, but if I sign on, say, with Fluvanna County, get $7,500, presumably I've got to stay for a year, or?
We currently have contracts. Don has helped us with that, and that contract goes into place, and there once the contract's over, there are no guarantees. It's what we try to do, and like I told you all once or twice before, the leadership class I went to, I think it was last fall, you know, the doctor said, people don't leave for a couple of thousand dollars, they leave for a lack of leadership. You know, but we weren't talking about $15,000 sign-on bonuses. And at the same time, you go over toward the Tidewater, and they're $20,000 sign-on bonuses.
Right, so I mean, so if you don't have a clawback that says if you don't work, you know, a year's time.
It's no different than what everybody else is doing. You can pay it out over a time period and set it as a contract, and it's not ever like it's a lump sum.
Okay.
But I think that with an increase, we're definitely going to have to change that and make it more solid. We'll get with the county attorney and change that a little bit. I'm trying to get some feedback for how, especially my neighbor, he with them just now starting, when Alamar will have a pretty good one in place for them to start with that. But yes, it's, I mean, what can you do? You know, it's but we do try to have a family atmosphere in our agency. I make it a point to have lunch with my deputies. I sit down and have one-on-ones with them. I can remember one we brought in from Alexandria a couple of years ago, and after we hired him, I had him come off and sit down and talk to me. And he was like, I said, well, you know, what kind of questions you got? He goes, I don't know. He said, I worked up there. He said, I never met my chief. I didn't know who he was. So, you know, that's those are the type of things we try to do here.
Because one of the things, I mean, I've talked about this class I'm taking a lot, to sit there and listen to Stafford argue with Prince William because they can't keep up with him. And right. They start talking about what they're paying, and I just kind of sit there and laugh, you know. Because they talk about the Coke all the time, but we're getting caught up trying to compete with everybody else around us. I mean, anyway, that's an argument for another day. But also, one of the great things we have here in our county is, you talked about how busy y'all were yesterday, and you had one domestic dispute. Here in some of those other counties that you're talking about, it might be five domestic disputes that they're dealing with,
yeah,
instead of
but then
one.
And you can go to Wintergreen where they hardly have anything, and you have an officer that was killed. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those jobs where you never know. And it was terrible yesterday. We didn't have a deputy that sent to the interstate. Usually, you always send somebody to the interstate, turn the blue light up when they're doing the procession. And we had absolutely nobody. Any other questions?
Any other questions?
Yes.
One.
Yeah.
One thing we talked about with sign-on bonuses and things of that nature, does this create a headache because then all of a sudden that brand new person's making more than the person who's been here 5 years?
No. I was asked that already. And with last year's pay increases in this, Peterson ran the numbers too, and he said nobody would be under that amount. We would not have any compression.
Yeah.
And that's very important.
Yeah, yes.
That's
yeah.
One fear that you always have.
And yes, we don't have that funding built in to our 24 budget, which we're going to start. But like I just told you, we're starting our 24 budget out with three vacancies.
Mm-hmm. And what's the time frame on this?
We'd like to put that in place in July 1. Yes, ma'am.
July 1.
Yes,
2023.
Right. So we've been without pretty much. There was a few weeks in this last fiscal year that we were 100% for a few weeks,
and then we bounce back and forth. Like I say, currently we're two down. And in the new position, that'll start in July, and we'll be down one part-time person.
Okay. Mr. Dahl, has that been covered in our budget?
What the sheriff's talking about?
Yes.
No.
No.
So this wasn't part of the budget.
Right. Then how would we solve this problem?
Like we did 2 years ago?
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
What's that?
Board contingency.
Yeah, board contingency, or see how things shake out with this budget by the end of the year. Again, those were some of the concerns that when Sheriff originally came, as I told him, the timing's not good. We're just getting ready to start a new budget year, and this wasn't discussed or this wasn't put into the budget. And I also had the same, I had that same concern that I mentioned to him about, is there going to be compression with this? Because again, even though those are the starting salaries, I want to be clear, not everyone starts off at that amount. I mean, I've got up to a 15% latitude based upon education, experience, and skills that individuals have. So it's not like I don't want to make it seem like we're just hiring people at that amount, but you know, there was a while there where we had a neighboring locality where they made mentions in some meetings that all of their deputies were leaving there and coming here because we did a salary increase. And you know, so my only concern is with the limited pool, is there going to be this like just back and forth? And I hope that's not the case. I mean,
the thing we're going to do, I'm going to do, is if I got somebody that's worked here for 2 years, I'm not even going to look at their application. Because they're gypsy cops.
Right.
They're hopping around for money. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to see others doing the very same thing. As, you know, everybody's getting, this is getting extremely competitive. Mm-hmm. And people that hop around are going to find themselves without a job.
Right.
Because nobody's going to take somebody on for 2 years and watch you walk away.
And again, what is before the board today? There's not action. This was just brought to the board as a presentation and informational, and then looking for feedback on from the board how to move forward. Again, because there's lots of things. Again, currently the certified sign-on bonus is $5,000.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's $5,000, and so, but currently there's no bonus for non-certified individuals that come on.
I think we'd have to see what the solutions, how much it would cost the county. I don't know how many people would be hired or how many people would be getting the bonuses.
Yeah,
the total
of
what we need to come up with.
Well, it's just an unknown variable because if we don't advertise something attractive when somebody's looking to fill out an application, are they even going to worry about filling out it?
Well, I mean, let's just say, you said you have 3 vacancies? I mean, so instantly, just looking at what the starting pay is, you're instantly talking at least a $3,000 increase per individual. So you're $9,000 right there, and plus, depending on are they certified, non-certified, let's just say you get 3 certified coming on. You know, we're already at 15, you're at 22.5 plus 9, you're at like 30,000 above what was already budgeted in the budget. That's just for the 3, assuming that he has no one else that leaves the rest of this next fiscal year. So
we do have one retirement in August.
So the people that are working for us now, they're not
going to
get a sign on
the list. No, there's a good bit that are here that did get
that. They did get
this, ma'am.
If they were certified, they would have got the 5.
If they were certified, yeah. Right. And we have put people through the academy. The one we're looking at to bring on right now is non-certified. Mm-hmm. And there is a local, young local person.
Okay.
Right. I mean, but all I can do is bring to you what I'm up against to try to keep public safety in the forefront of the community. And that's all I can do is give you the facts and the figures and hope for the best. But the odds of me filling 3 positions are pretty slim.
You said you only have 1 applicant right now.
I only have 1 application. And that person is what we're doing background. And it is not certified.
Well, that gives me a better idea of what, how much money we're talking about.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, like I say, Eric, Tori, and Donna are much better at giving you those projected figures.
In a guess, Ms. Eager?
What?
In a guess?
Yeah.
We're looking at 30 with the three positions. That's what you got off the top of your head, worst case scenario.
I would say probably 100,000 if I had to.
I was going to say 50. I mean, you know, hopefully we don't have five leave during the year.
Oh, but you got to fill the spaces, so no guarantee that just because they leave, you're going to fill them, right? Because if Altamaha County's got 30 unfilled seats, you know, it's just a matter of where people want to go. So
yeah, I mean, there's things that Fluvanna has as a benefit over other localities, and there's some things that Fluvanna can offer. If someone's trying to be SWAT or something like that, you
exactly.
know, Fluvanna doesn't offer.
The one we just lost was that he enjoyed his time here. He learned a lot, but he was ready to move on to bigger and be more diverse and the abilities that he could take on, and you know, whether it's SWAT, canine, a variety of things. And you're always going to wind up with those people. But I can remember back in my early days here with Ryan Washington, with how many people we went through at times, and it was, you know, they'd stay here 2 years and go on. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a revolving door.
We talked a lot about how we would just train them, and then they would go get a certified job somewhere else.
Our salary was so low compared to others. And that's why the salaries that I gave you aren't from large. These are our neighbors, Louisa and Goochland. And Goochland's salary is high as they are, and over the last 2 years got over 10 positions. They're 100% staffed in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Wow.
How long ago did we do the other adjustment?
The big bump?
Yeah, because we were $9,000 behind it.
Yeah, I think we did. Was it like September of 2021?
Yes.
Yeah.
We're talking less than 2 years ago.
Yes.
And I think, if memory serves me right, Louisa Goochland was 52 and Louisa was like 51. And now they're 56
and 56,250.
Now those 56s, are those certified or non-certified, or does it? Do we know?
I don't know.
Okay.
Well, there's nothing stopping us.
Like the state police, they, you know, when you reach that anniversary date, you automatically get the bump. Just like if you were on a comp board position, you know, they have that in place where after a certain period of time, the county gets more money than that person under L7. I think it's from L7 to L8. So.
The board could also just set a limit cap for the year as well, too. You know, so.
Anything you could do, as long as people can look when they look on the website and say, oh, this is even worth filling out the application. And that's kind of the mindset that I'm looking at, you know, where we're you know, with that, we're competing. We're not at the forefront of anything.
Now we have a Wawa now. So
can't wait. Same. I guarantee you, Debbie will appreciate a snack at 3 in the morning. Something's
right.
Open. And they can stop by there as they're doing their rounds. Right. And actually get a healthy snack.
Should put that in the application. You know. Wawa nearby.
I'll just say this much. I know that one of our neighbors, I'm not going to call all the names, but their neighbor on the other side from us gave a 20% increase the last 2 years. And I'm telling you, as I go to the board meetings and stuff, and it's ridiculous to listen to them talk about how they're just fighting over the same, you know, they're having the exact same argument in Fairfax, and Prince William.
And there's no place, all the deputies in the state, it's close to 300 short for the entire state. It was like 278 earlier. I'm sure it's even more than that.
And, you know, the one thing with this, you know, I mean, certainly, you know, the sheriff's office already has this. You know, this could funnel into other things, too. Just, I mean, if there's other departments that are having issues, you know, this could...
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I think Almore's is a $5,000 sign-on for everybody.
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 So, board, what are we looking for the next time.
Budget.
To tell Eric to bring to us.
Estimated.
Estimated cost, and you said it would start July.
It would be nice to be able to start, seeing as we're going to be three positions down.
Yeah.
It would be nice to be able to at least have that on the website, mm-hmm. where when people are looking through, right. and they look at the differences, mm-hmm. And really, like the young man we're doing background on now, those are really the people that I'd like to attract, instead of them going to Louise or Goosland or into Alva County. The one we just lost after being here a little over 2 years went to Alva County, mm-hmm. Where there are more opportunities to do a variety of job descriptions.
Did I hear you saying you wanted to have it on by July?
Well, it can't be on by July. I mean, this couldn't be come to the board until July 5th.
Right. That's what I was asking.
Because we're going to be three down. I'd like to get it whenever we can get it on there. That'd be awesome. Yeah. And like I say, Don, we haven't gotten any new with them.
And one thing I will say, this will be covered by what's already in the budget. Because unless he's fully staffed, How much money is it that we save when it's an unfilled position?
Yeah, but right now, I mean, we're just starting off the new budget year. So, I mean, technically, there's really no vacancy savings at this point.
Not yet.
Yeah.
But, well, yes, there is, because they're not out of last year's. They're not out of last year's budget, so that'll be money that can come back.
Well, we're starting the new payroll right now for this year.
I hear what you're saying. With us being short-staffed, there's automatically $60,000 worth of savings per person that were short-staffed. And that's just a guess off the top of my head.
That, like I say, that I had to call over to the accounting finance to
Miss Beth. Yeah.
Better give you true numbers.
Correct.
Yeah. True. All I can give you is what my competition
I think we went to $48,000 for the starting salary.
Do you have an idea of how many deputies leave on average in a year?
Let's see, this last year we lost 1, 2, 3. Did we have, was there four? Or just
I think
three?
It was four.
Four. Yeah. Yeah. So, like I said, there was that short window of 4 weeks maybe that we were fully staffed, and we started out, I think, two in the hole for a while, and then the one that's been gone since January has never been filled.
I think on the low end, you're probably, let's just say it was 4 or 5. I mean, probably the low end you're looking at for an additional 30,000. High end, you're probably looking at 75, something like that. 40 to 75 is probably the range, is what I'm just doing some quick 30 minutes.
We're talking about bringing that back to.
Well, yeah, I can. I mean, I'm not going to be able to really tell you. I mean, I can put it out on the paper, but I just don't know what it is. I mean, I can put four people in what the potential, you know, the swing could be, but it's a pretty significant, you know, I mean, whether they're certified or non-certified for the bonus piece, that's a pretty big swing. I mean, the $3,000, I mean, that's easy to do per person. I can bring something forward. It's going to be a swag.
Well, all you're looking for tonight is just a head nod to say, bring it forward or not bring it forward.
Yeah, I mean, and what I guess what Sheriff Hess is proposing. I mean, there's a couple different things here. You got the sign-on bonus one. He's asking to increase the certified one. We currently don't do non-certified, so you got the bonus piece. That's one component. There's the shift differential. That's the second piece, and then increasing the starting is kind of the third.
Well, that's very important to us, Sterling's.
So yeah, the impact of the shift differential we didn't talk about. That would be pretty significant.
Yeah, I mean, you know. I mean,
you got that's. I mean, that's you got what 60.
Well, that would be 1,100 bucks times 20.
Times 20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 20.
Yeah, that's pretty significant there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd like to see some math and some case scenarios or something. I'm not sure.
I guess what we can do, we can try and pull. I mean, for the last 3 years, just try and pull to see how many people we've lost per year. And then just kind of taking that average, we can say, okay, well, with rehiring, we could put some numbers low end to high end to those. and then we could put down on paper what is the increase based upon the shift differential too for what we have existing.
So we have an $1,100 shift differential right now?
Right now, yes.
$22,000.
Yeah, again, I mean, you, like I said, I have a feeling you're going to be closer probably to 100 when it's all said and done.
22 that you'd have to talk about.
Yeah, we have talked about that.
Yeah.
But bring it back with numbers. I mean, I think, Ms. Egan.
And we can go back and tell you how many we've lost each year. How far back? Five years?
Go back before our pay change and then after our pay change. See if that made a difference.
Okay. Yeah,
I was going to say that, you know, probably from an initial hiring perspective, the shift differential is something that comes up that often. You know, people look at the sign-on bonus, they look at the pay, they don't really think about the shift differential, is my guess. I don't know that for a fact.
The shift differential has been put into place in agency because as people stay there, then they get burned out from the road work and they tend to want to migrate to the Monday through Friday, the court jobs, the SRO jobs, and stuff like that, where they have a fixed schedule and they're not working at night.
Yeah.
So that's why places are doing that. You're seeing places too, like, you know, somebody comes on to work with you, they say, oh, I gotta work a year before I get a vacation. Some places are starting to front load them with a 2 weeks vacation. They're getting creative, you know, to try to get people. When you offer somebody $20,000 to walk in the door to me, that's pretty darn creative.
Yeah, you said that's a down payment on the house, right? What I was just simply saying is that maybe we table the shift differential to the budget season.
Yeah, we can add that into next year, budget, or whatever y'all come up with. I'm just giving you ideas that will help us be more marketable in this crazy competition of the limited people that want to do this. No different than teachers. I heard in Greene County today crying they didn't have any teachers. All my teachers. And it's, you know, it's one of the, where everybody's working at.
And teachers are getting long, it's just the sound on everywhere. Yeah.
But I thank you for your time.
Thank you for your questions.
And so just so I understand, board wants staff to come back with some cost estimates for what he's talking about based upon some, maybe Sheriff, just maybe we just look at 4 years, kind of go 2 years, maybe 4 years, because we do the 2 years since we've done the increase, and then 2 years before, just to see what the numbers are.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you don't even want to look at the ones that retire. Does that make sense?
Because I got three people that can retire at the time they want to.
I can't believe somebody to work after their retirement day.
Well, I can't either, because they can walk and go into another job and get their full retirement plus their Leos and start another career. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. So, thank you. So next is E, open meeting requirements under the Virginia Freedom of Information Act. And this is attorney Dan Whitten.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. So this is a short presentation. It's actually based on a case that came out of Prince William County that went to the Virginia Supreme Court in May. The Supreme Court issued a decision. So I'm going to go over the facts of the case and talk about why it's relevant to this board and also the Planning Commission and other public bodies in the county. So basically, this case was based on the facts from the George Floyd protests, which we all remember, in 2020. So the day after the protests took place in Prince William County, five members of the board attended a police citizen advisory board meeting. So that happened at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And then later that afternoon at 4 o'clock, the board held an emergency meeting where they gave proper notice of the 4 o'clock meeting. At the 1 o'clock meeting, there was not proper notice that the board of supervisors was going to have a meeting of the board. So a few of the board members actually did participate in the meeting. They asked questions and made statements. One board member actually made a request to the police chief for a copy of the report regarding the protest. after the police chief had made a presentation. And then at the 4 o'clock emergency meeting, the police chief made the exact same presentation to the board that he did to the 5 members. What was interesting is the 3 members who did not attend the 1 o'clock meeting were actually not invited. Only 5 members of the board knew about the meeting, which was interesting. So 2 county residents claimed the meeting violated FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, because there was not proper notice. So the history of the case, the 2 county residents did file a petition in circuit court for injunctive and mandamus relief and recovery of costs and attorney fees. Originally, the circuit court dismissed the lawsuit after concluding the gathering did not constitute a meeting under FOIA, but then the Supreme Court reversed the decision of the circuit court and remanded the case back to circuit court for further decision. So basically what the Supreme Court decided is that part of the purpose of the meeting was a discussion of public business of the Board of Supervisors, and such public business was actually discussed in the meeting, and that was because what was discussed was actually then discussed at a future meeting 3 hours later, the exact business. So it was actually public business that was considered by the board at the present time and at a future time. So basically the definition they came up with was that public business must not be just something that conceptually could at some point come before a public body, but rather the topic must be something that's either before the public body or is likely to come before the body in the foreseeable future. So because the board at the 4 o'clock meeting discussed the George Floyd protest, that was something that the board discussed just 3 hours later. So when they had that emergency meeting, they actually did give the proper notice. The county attorney sent out the notice at around like 1:30 and sent it to the board members who were actually in the 1 o'clock meeting. And so we're having an emergency meeting at 4. But proper notice wasn't given for the first meeting. So the court held the gathering was a meeting. The meeting did not comply with the meeting requirements under FOIA. So what did that mean? Basically, so next slide, please.
Yep.
So basically, if you look, what's the definition of a meeting? It's 3 or more members of the board or of a public body or a quorum if the public body is less than 3 members. So here, this board would be 3 members. If 3 members were at any kind of gathering where public business is being discussed, so that'd be any matter that is currently on a board agenda, let's say like the Wawa, or something on a future agenda, like, you know, a solar farm that's coming. If that's being discussed at this gathering where a board member is asking questions, making a comment, then basically that's an improper meeting.
Can I ask a question? Sorry to
interrupt. Sure.
Discussed to me is a pretty relevant word, meaning is it discussed if 2 board members don't communicate about that in that public forum? Or let's say they do. Is that the discussion we're defining, or is discussion where the subject is discussed in the room, such as we did have a solar meeting and there were,
I think we had there was 3 board members, and I think we even had 4 planning, or maybe the planning commission, maybe that was the town hall meeting. We had 3 board members and 4 planning commission members, but right. I think we had 3 board members at the solar one, and then I think there was 3 planning commissioners at the solar one too, I believe. Possibly.
So what the Supreme Court says, basically, because 3 members are at the meeting you're speaking of, if any member of the planning commission or the board makes a comment regarding, you know, public business, regarding the solar farm, something that's going to be on a future agenda, then that's a meeting and that it should basically be given. So what I've always advised, if a community meeting is coming up, then basically the county administrator or county attorney would send a notice to the board saying, "Hey, this community meeting, if 3 members are not show up, please let me know. The county attorney will work on a notice that we can submit, that the clerk can send out." Or if three members show up and you didn't realize another member was going to be there, then either 1 member can leave, where you only have 2 members, or basically those 3 members can't discuss the public business at all. They can be there and listen. They can listen. They can't make any comments, they can't ask any questions. Basically, this rule, this Supreme Court hearing kind of decision kind of tightened the rule on what is an improper meeting in when notice needs to be given. Because in this case, it's not like the board member, he was just asking questions of the chief. He wasn't actually discussing it with another board member. He was just making comments, asking questions of the police chief.
But before that meeting began, it was announced that the board members that were not to ask any questions.
So yeah, I mean, that's kind of the safeguard. Basically, whoever's leading the meeting or staff can say, okay, there's three board members here. You know, basically, the board members will not be able to take any questions. They'll not be able to ask any questions. Please don't discuss the matter with the board members. They're just here to listen. And that's kind of a safeguard, because at that point, you really don't have time to give an emergency notice of the meeting.
I think that was just at the Fork Union meeting.
Yeah,
I have to say.
Right there.
But at Solar, that wasn't mentioned. And I remember when we had the initial comp plan meeting with all the different posters up here, there were three of us in the room, and it was said, understanding law, you know, the new precedence has been set. There were three of us in the room, and I remember even saying, okay, I'll be the one to leave. And then it was said, well, if we're not conducting business together, but we were certainly here for the same purpose to review the items from the comp plan.
I think the difference is, are you sitting there and just listening, or are you trying to engage in conversation? Because I think if you're just sitting there listening, not making comment, then I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, then that would be the differential.
But I also picked up on, I thought you just said, even that you can't be discussing it with citizens. So you can't have three board members in a group of a bunch of people who are going to be eventually voting on this. Not to say can't. It's, if you had three board members in a room with citizens to look at this, we were naturally not going to stand there and look at it without speaking or responding.
Speaking to a citizen.
Yeah.
So I mean, I could see the court had considered that, to my knowledge, at this point, but I could see them going down that route. To save the same core, if the question was just the board members discussing it with the citizens, I could see the board making the same rule. I mean, the court making the same rule.
Yeah.
So that would just be a procedural safeguard.
What would be the definition of the conversation? Is it a conversation with one member of the public, or is it a conversation with multiple members of the public where it can be heard, in which case you could consider a discussion versus a conversation?
Right? I think the best safeguard, if there's three members there, is one member leaves, or if you're at a community meeting, just give a special notice, you know, send out the special notice as a safeguard. I mean, I've had meetings before where our board sent out the special notice and three members didn't show up. But we sent out the notice just in case three members showed up.
So we can do that over anything?
Well, I mean, Sissy, here's the thing, because remember, there's county meetings and there's non-county sponsored meetings. Now, Some of these topics that are coming up, the developers, I think of specifically the solar, or I'm thinking Revention Farm. So there have been meetings, but these are not county-led meetings. So,
well, he also did say if it's going to go in front.
Correct. Yes.
It's going to
work.
So, for example, FLDP, right? You know, you have not uncommon to have three members of FLDP for dinner, right? And we're not technically discussing anything that is, you know, quote, county business matters, except that we provide money to the FLDP. So you could say that maybe you are doing that.
Yeah, we may be putting out a lot of special meeting notices.
Well, it's no difference when you're like at the Bank of Commerce, three members go. You know, when you're at dinner, technically, you're not supposed to be discussing public business. Now, obviously, the county attorney's not there, but, you know, you're not supposed to be discussing anything that's on current or future agenda when you're at any of these,
So at the Fork Union meeting that we had June the 3rd, the supervisor gave the opening comments, and I think Chris made a statement, so we were in violation.
I think opening welcome is okay.
That's okay.
I think opening welcome is welcoming people, but it's actually discussing the issues or asking questions. I think that's where you could be crossing the line, and you just don't want to test that case in court. Because now Prince William is going to have to pay a lot of money in attorney fees and costs for the plaintiffs who took this.
Right.
So that's the risk. It's better to be safe than just give notice of the meeting or just two members.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
I've been a part of one of those, but that, we actually said at the beginning, Mr. Nichols got up, it's when we did the waterline meeting over at the ARC building. And he got up at the beginning of the meeting and said, we have three board members present, but they are not to discuss anything and they will not take questions or
make a public comment.
Make a public comment.
We have, in my short term on this board, we've had a number of precedences set, and it's now good to know, especially with the new accident that happened. Hopefully we'll clean that up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I guess just from a procedural standpoint, from staff and the board standpoint, I guess I would like to know, does the board want staff to if anytime there's a community meeting, say, hey, how many board members are going? And if that's the case, then do we put out a special meeting, or do we want to assume everyone's going to be there and not make comment? And that's kind of the distinction.
So a citizen called me about this today and made a great point that let's take that solar meeting. That's a venue where there are board members in the room that they assume, because we do this, that we know more about what's going on than others, than a lot of citizens. So they want us to be there potentially asking questions that we would think of based upon all the stuff that's coming at us that the average citizen would not have seen as many articles, questions, so on about solar as we have. And so the citizen was making the point, that's our chance, one board member, for you to get educated, ask questions there, and for you to in part educate us, meaning whether it's a part of the solar discussion formally or break out with a group of people to the side. And I would think that in venues like that we would want, I understand it's a pain in the butt to have to send notice, we would want to put out notice so we can have free discussion and within the meeting and the citizens.
Go ahead. Tell
what's me. The requirement as far as notice goes? I mean, you just have to put out fan mail or?
Well, there's such thing as emergency notice, and there's also
special meeting notice and emergency notice. Yeah. You just put it on the website, put it on Facebook, email it to members of the media. At the same time, you email it to members of the board. So emergency meetings reasonable under the circumstances. Special meeting is 3 days under state cap.
I hear your point, Chris, but I mean that's kind of where why some of those vendors or applicants asked to meet with us beforehand so that we're not doing that necessarily. But I mean
for the citizens, not the
no, I understand that, but I'm saying our opportunity is to get educated with the vendor beforehand. Like, in the case of the solar vendor had asked to meet with us on 2-on-2s, so that's your opportunity to do that. And then if there's three members there, best cause is just don't say anything, related to business.
I don't want to do meeting. I'm not motivated. I thought most of us said this recently. Not motivated to do these 2-on-1. With all these, everybody who wants to
I agree, I'm not motivated to do that, but in light of what the county attorney is saying right now, it's a very fine line, you have to be very careful. So if you made a statement about your opinions of it, and there's three other members there, and you're taking the approach of this is, I am here the representative of the board, and I am more informed, well, that sure sounds like you're violating the agreement.
Well, unless we get notice, right? Unless you did public
notice. Unless you provided the notice, right. But then how often are you providing
the notice? But citizens have the opportunity to have a discussion that we have. All they have to do is go.
They have that opportunity every Wednesday when we meet, too.
But that if that was the case, then we wouldn't have called 75 people at a solar meeting. But we don't have 75 people to discuss.
But you can make the discussion saying, supervisors are here, they're not here to answer questions. Mm-hmm. If you have questions, you are welcome to contact them after the meeting.
But you can't do it.
There are many opportunities.
And I can say, I've worked in Arundel County where there was a solar meeting, community meeting that was only held. Once the board knew how many citizens were going to be at this community meeting, we actually moved it to the community center and then held, gave the special notice, and the board, it became more a question and answer period for the board members who sat up there and more given, and that's what the community wanted, was more given, ask questions. Because, you know, public comments really not, we come up here tonight, it's not a question and answer period.
Right.
And that's what, because it was a newer concept, that's what the community wanted, was to be able to ask those questions.
But we really do try to answer people when they come up here and make a statement. Sometimes we do. When we're deliberating, we bring out some of those things that people brought out in public, in the public hearing.
But it's a little bit of a slippery slope as well, too,
yes,
right?
Because it is.
You could end up having quote-unquote public meetings with discussion forming public opinion before the entire board has had an opportunity to review and think about it, you know, as well, too. So I think that's you know, kind of a, you know, a difficult position, because now, well, okay, we're having a special meeting, it's on this particular issue, are we all going to show up, all have discussion, and this is now really a board meeting, which was just supposed to be a meeting to inform people. I think that's where you really want to be careful about how you're approaching it, to avoid those kinds of situations.
My sense is that maybe you should start off using some discretion or being conversational, be it with you, Eric, or whatever, of, hey guys, you know, this seems like one where you could have more than two board members. Would you all like me to make an announcement? And it's simple, right? Me announcing a public meeting.
Yeah, I mean, normally, I mean, you all talk about this. Yes, it's fairly simple.
It is fairly simple, but the question that I have that this brings up is, emergency meetings can happen very quickly. We find out at 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning that there's a 4 o'clock. What do we do about minutes?
So, I mean, basically, I mean, the minutes don't have to be verbatim, obviously.
Yeah, right. There's a transcript.
At that Prince William emergency meeting, I'm not sure if the clerk, I know the county attorney was there, I know the county administrator was there, I don't know if the clerk was there, but I mean, I'm sure they took a recording of the meeting and then the clerk put together the minutes. There's not a requirement that the clerk has to be at that meeting, but probably a recording's not a bad idea for the clerk to put together the minutes.
So that gets to my concerns about those quickly called special meetings, is just the logistics of making sure we've been properly recorded that meeting, so that we're completely in compliance with what those meeting requirements are.
I mean, I would say mostly, I mean, because again, my concern is, let's just say that I don't think this is a likely scenario, that say staff wasn't there for some reason, or
there's just so many.
If you have, if let's say I'm talking to five members of the public, Moselle's talking to five members of the public, Chris is talking to five members of the public, well, there's no way, quote, anything can be recorded as far as that goes. And maybe we're all talking about the solar project and we have different opinions on that. Is that a meeting? I don't know, you know? I mean, it's...
Let me make
I think Fred has something.
You know, lawyers are a very conservative group, and I sure can agree with you on that. The one thing that can throw a monkey wrench into the county's processes is a procedural violation. It's very rare that anybody challenges the substantive decision of the board supervisor on any significant matter. Challenges and wins is very rare. The places they win are on the procedure. And I've always advised you that you either don't have three members at the meeting or you don't say anything. And that's a pretty sharp line. And I realize that there can be exceptions and you can fudge this and that. But as soon as you do that, then you lose your position where there is a bright line and we stayed behind that line. We're now edging up on it. And the problem with it is, if you look at it on a cost-benefit basis, how much benefit are you going to get from having the board members come and present questions that may be perfectly relevant questions that they would be able to get anyway at the public hearing or on an individual basis? And making one of these very technical decisions, technical distinctions, and making the wrong decision by somebody that, you know, seven unelected judges 2 years from now, they get a chance to think about it, you don't. The only conservative advice that I think makes sense is don't do it. And if you, that way, you basically can't screw up. So if you go to one of these meetings and listen to the presentation and you have questions now, you have the opportunity to either through the staff or yourself contact the whoever's giving the meeting and say, your comments raised a question in my mind. I'd like more information on this if you could send it to me directly.
Yeah.
That clearly would not be a meeting. Wouldn't violate the ordinance. I wouldn't violate the statute. You have no exposure now. And it's an easy line to have. It's very tough to be in that meeting and have your constituents say, well, Mr. O'Brien, why don't you ask the question? Because you know a lot about this issue, whatever it might be. And, you know, it seems like a perfectly logical thing. It is a perfectly logical thing. But then you're walking that tightrope that is between violating the ordinance and not, violating the statute and not. And if you violate it, that's a big deal. And remember the old lawyer's maxim which I have become increasingly familiar over the years, and that is, somebody sues you, the process is the punishment. You can win, and you still spend a gazillion dollars on attorney's fees, and if you lose a little bit, then you only spend a gazillion and a half. To no real benefit. So the distinctions that Dan is making are good lawyer. But I'm suggesting the better course is not rely on the good lawyer. Just take the rule, stick to the rule, and don't cross over. So the safest thing to do is not go to the meeting at all.
Yeah.
But if you go to the meeting, go there and don't say anything.
I'm saying.
About public business.
Yeah.
If you want to discuss whether LSU is going to be Wake Forest, that's fine. But you can't discuss how much money the county should be getting out of a certain solar application.
Mm-hmm. So I would say, and I like a conservative procedural perspective, and I would say let's have that in that if there are either that we won't have three members in the room, I'm okay with either we won't have three members in the room, or if there's three members, don't say a word, but that we do make an attempt to advertise that there is a meeting where we have reason to believe there's going to be a substantial group of people. Because if we advertise, we're in the good.
And that sounds like our meeting.
What's that?
That sounds like it's our meeting. Like it's our meeting.
Yeah.
But
I view these things as the applicant's meeting.
But to the legal side, aren't we, with your concern, no matter who they think is, well, in the solar meeting, Douglas led the much of the discussion in the opening of the meeting. I was wondering if it was.
Douglas is not bound by the statute, by this provision of the statute.
But does it make a difference if we have announced the meeting, then does it make a difference who they think is
this conversation the illustrates precisely my point. As soon as you vary from that hard line, then it's a question of what is a judge going to think of this next month or next year.
So are you saying...
Don't tempt the judge with that.
So are you saying that no matter who asked to hold the meeting, either the county or some applicant, that it does, if we announce it, if we make a public announcement that there's going to, that it's a board meeting?
If we advertise it.
Or advertise.
Yeah.
If we advertise it, is there a discrepancy in the, or a difference in the law of who held that meeting?
You know, Dan gave you a very, very succinct discussion of what constitutes a meeting. If somebody puts a notice on fan mail that XYZ Solar Company is going to present an issue regarding solar power generation in Louisiana County. Fan mails, that doesn't make it our activity. What I'm saying is, when you get the people together, if these three people right here get in a room together and discuss public business, that arguably is a meeting. That is a definition of a meeting. That can be construed as a meeting, even if nobody else is there.
But if we...
I don't know how I can parse this, because what I'm telling you is don't parse it.
Well, I understand, but I'm not there. And so I feel like you're answering something that I'm not asking you. So, for example, is the only way we publicize that we're going to have this meeting, the board meeting, that we just put something on fan mail?
No.
So if
no,
so I'm saying just to put on fan mail is not our accepted means of letting the public know that we're going to, a public notification that there's going to be a meeting. If we use the same processes that we use for a Board of Supervisors meeting, are we legal to have three board members there participating in conversations? Let's just answer that question, just that question directly.
Sure, it can be done.
Yeah, if you give the proper notice to the proper channels, so that be on the website, Facebook, or this, then it's a special.
Yeah, the way we post...
2 weeks.
The way we post, we've got all of our meetings on the website, and then the Friday before the meeting, we post online the package for that meeting.
That's
the
way. Got a very good point. It's like you can adjourn. Let's say there's a community meeting next week. You get adjourned from this meeting. You know, we're adjourning to a special meeting next Wednesday, this community meeting. So then you're even given more notice.
Mr. Chair, this is
all right, Mr. Chair.
I've got a very quick question. If we start announcing public meetings and we run so we can have three people there. First off, let me preface this by saying I trust the people on this board. But every one of us here has known people in politics that you can't trust. If we announce a public meeting and three people show up, they can deal with public business, correct? They can make decisions for this board because they have a quorum. Technically, they could.
You're saying after they adopted an agenda and had you'd have to have a formal.
Well, let's say they just show up and
you still have to follow your bylaws. You have bylaws that talk about how a meeting has to be conducted in order to pass
you
an item.
You can start off and say, "Hey, I brought this in. I've got this little agenda. I want to go ahead and get a vote on."
So, if two people, if Tony and I just decided we want to get this done, we're going to have three people there. We've already announced a public meeting. He can make a motion that I want to adopt this agenda. I could second that motion. The vote's going to pass 2-1, and we can make any county decision we wanted to make at that meeting.
All of this discussion is perfectly illustrative of what I'm saying.
Well, that's the point that I'm making, Fred.
Yes,
that could happen if you
could very easily happen.
Do these things this way. That's why I think we're much safer to not put... To not open that can of worms. I think that's the way Fred's been describing it. And then Chris, I agree with you. I hate not talking. Y'all know that.
You're sure.
I can't help it. But that could easily be Tony and I get together and decide, hey, you know what? We're going to have a third member there. Now, the third member, if this is me, I just get up and leave when they tried to pull that jump. But say they don't. Then all of a sudden, they can make any decision they want. Am I wrong, Mr. Whitten?
I said you have to follow the bylaws, also state code, you have to have certain requirements for both supermajority. So you can't just do anything.
Well, but I'm just saying, this could open up a door for something possibly like that to happen.
Do the bylaws say we have to publish our agenda?
Usually it said, I believe it says the agenda is provided the Thursday before meeting. But usually you have a section there that talks about special meetings, so I'd have to look at that and see what it says about the agendas.
I don't know that. I'm just throwing out a scenario.
Yeah, that's why I asked. Well, I think in that scenario, it seems like we're protected if it doesn't meet our bylaws.
But I think Fred's point is well taken, is whose meeting is it? Our meeting or the other meeting or the community meeting? The point of the community meeting is so that community members can get informed. You know, presumably we're already informed part of the process. We're not there to help form public opinion or to be part of the discussion of public opinion. That's what we do when we have a public hearing.
You don't want to be in the business of guessing the answer to the question. Is this a meeting, is it a violation if I go there? You don't want to be in the business of doing that, because it's happened plenty of times for me in my 48 years of practice, and I'm sure it's happened to Dan, where you walk into court and this is as solid a case as I've ever seen, and the judge says, I don't know what you're talking about, I think you're wrong. It happens not all the time, but it happens often enough that I want to protect myself against it. And the way to protect yourself is don't allow the question to be asked.
And we'd be stuck with proving our innocence if somebody made that up.
That's right.
Well, let's say it was a zoning matter that went to circuit court, say it was a solar case, and then the petitioner argues, well, the board was at, three members of the board were discussing it, and they made these comments, and then as part of the court record, those comments were made that really it wasn't part of a properly noticed.
Because it wasn't publicized.
So it's just easier to keep to your normal public hearing schedule. That's when you have your meetings is here. Because that is the worry. If you have these special meetings, there's only three members there, the whole board's not there, you're not getting the whole board's perspective. And if that case ended up going into court, that record from that meeting when there was only three members there could end up being the fact pattern that kind of changes that fairly debatable analysis, and then you lose that zoning case.
I think it also makes a good point, if this is the way we're going to go, Tony, that you may no more three board members at an FLDP graduation.
If you're discussing public business, I guess that's the thing. So, but I don't know how you don't do it.
You're going to go to a Fluvanna Leadership Development Program nobody's going to discuss.
Well, that's why I'm asking. That is the weird question, because in theory there is no public business. It's just a group that receives money from us.
Well, what's wrong with saying I cannot discuss that with you? Don't ask me.
You can say give me a call later.
For one, it's not procedural.
No comments. I can't discuss.
No, but I'm saying it's not procedural to that we have something in place that, as Fred said, why take the chance? Because the next board member who wasn't a part of this conversation, we'll have two board members, you know, 6 months from now who weren't a part of this conversation. And if you don't have something procedural, then...
So you're saying have something in writing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is understood by...
Yeah, I think the crux is what defines the, quote, subject matter that constitutes public business, right?
So if you go to the next slide, talk about the exceptions. So, exception one, any place or function where no part of the purpose of the gathering is a discussion or transaction of public business. And no such gathering attendance is called and prearranged for any purpose of discussing it. So basically, the purpose of the meeting was not public business. You know, you're just at the Elks Club and three members showed up to an awards banquet.
Graduation at the high school.
So, exception two is the public forum, which is less likely, is candidate appearance debate, where it's attend form of the electorate. That's less likely, but that's the other exception to the meeting definition.
So the first one's in the case of the FLDP dinner, that's just, the graduates from the program there is no quote public business, I guess, in that example.
So it's not, there's not a resolution that the board passes at a later point honoring those graduates.
Right.
So that would say, okay, it's not public business because it's not something that's currently on a board agenda or going to be on a future board agenda.
But if three of us are there and we start talking about the, you know, water deal or the solar deal,
sure,
then we're in violation.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's like staff, county attorney, not to be at every gathering you may potentially end up at. So it's just kind of, you know, advice if you are in that situation. Just don't discuss it, or one of you has to walk away.
That's what you said you offered it one time, Chris.
Three of us are here. We cannot discuss any public business, so we're welcome to talk about baseball.
So what are we saying? Are we saying no, never three people in the room unless it's been publicized? That's the same thing to do. I mean, otherwise, what are the odds that it's going to end up happening? You're sitting in a room of landmines. And the next board member who wasn't a part of this conversation,
that's one way to solve it.
What's that?
That's one way to solve it.
Yeah.
Just don't
bother. But I'm saying it's going to end up, the talking's going to end up happening. I'm saying no, never three people in a room that meets the criteria unless it's been publicized.
And it has been publicized, one person has to be.
Right.
Well, they rotate.
However, it is.
It's not just the publication. Your publication is important, but that's not the only
thing.
There has to be a proper record kept, yeah. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have formal minutes or any sessions.
Here's my last question. I'm trying not to throw one of your interests here, but like three people were at, I'm guessing, the 14 year meeting. So if they rotated two in and one out, would that be adequate? I mean, I know we're playing with rules there.
Yeah, I think it's in the right.
I think you're skirting the line.
I mean, if you read the line, at any press function where no part of the purpose of such a gathering or attendance is a discussion or transaction of it.
Let me just tell you, the lawyer's answer to that, it depends.
Well, so I mean, going to graduation, five of us are there. There's no purpose there to discuss.
Right. I'm sitting there watching my granddaughter graduate.
If you're at the parade, you know, five members should be on the flag.
Right. And somebody comes up and says, well, Fred, what do you think of the Stoke Solar issue? Mm-hmm. I'm not here for that purpose. I'm here to watch my grandma, mm-hmm. granddaughter graduate.
Right.
So I'd like to turn it the other way. Right. So then let's just make a policy that says, I disagree with it, but I'm okay. Let's move on. It says we shall not do it where at a function where it is part of the purpose of such part of the purpose of such gathering or attendance is in the discussion or transaction of the public business.
The other way to do that would be to say we have a policy that we do not violate conduct or participate in meetings that violate the Freedom of Information Act. Because as soon as you start paraphrasing the statute, then you get back into the, you know, how many angels can dance on the head of this pin.
Yeah, I think the county attorney, I'm not the county attorney, the county administrator oftentimes is in a lot of these meetings, and I know, like, for example, Steve Nichols would say, hey, there's three members here, they cannot discuss any public business, you know, and that's just put out there for the public, right, to understand. And it's also just a good reminder, oh yeah, there's three of us here and we can't talk about this stuff. That's just the way it is. So.
I think we're making it hard.
But I think to Chris's point, it's, you know, there's that kind of that fine line between a community meeting, you know, about an upcoming issue, you know, whether it's a comprehensive plan, whether it's solar, whether it's whatever, you know, that is a real danger flashpoint there, you know, where, you know, it's a discussion for hot debate. People are going to be fired up about it. You may already have a strong opinion about it one way or another, and so it's really easy to slip into that. And that's probably where it makes sense to say, we should have more than two of us there. You know, and that's that.
I think, let's just do what Fred said. And it will be vague in the future because there will be, in my business I call it hit by a truck. There will be people in this room that are hit by a truck, meaning that aren't at the seat anymore, that they're going to go be back to a vague document that they didn't sit around and have this discussion about, and they're going to have to refer to that we will not violate, and I'm okay with it. It doesn't bring much structure two board rotations from now, it could be extremely different who's sitting at these tables. And they're not gonna, they're gonna try to figure out how to go back to this. Just as in the short time I've been on this board, we've had these discussions over who's okay in a room and so on. I'm fine with the vagueness of saying, let's say we will not violate.
Well, the two new members will have to go through FOIA training. Either I can give the training or they can do it online. Both new members will have to get the FOIA training. And because of this case, I'm sure if I give it or whoever gives it is going to reiterate this point because of this recent Supreme Court case. Mm-hmm. So they'll know right away what it means or what was considered to be.
So however we need to make the motion, that's what my motion will be.
Well, when we look at the bylaws at the beginning of the year, I mean, does it say we will file a Freedom of Information Act? You could have it something as general as that.
So we need to have
it. May already be in there.
No, there's no motion tonight. This is just presenting and just kind of informing the board. And when we do the bylaws, we can make it clear in the bylaws.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Good discussion.
All right, F, Design Crossroad Water and Sewage System Project Cost.
Yeah, so questions were asked about, questions were asked about this previously, and I'll kind of briefly go over it. So let me get rid of some of this stuff here, because I got a lot on here. Okay, so I'm just going to kind of get an overview of what we spent on the project today, what we've... The funding sources we've got on the project, and again, so I'm going to break it up into two things. We got Zion's Crossroads original phase one. That's basically what I call the project that's in the ground that we're already hooking up people to. When I say Zion's Crossroads West extension phase two, that's the extension that we talked about before, and there's not a lot of activity on that, but I just want to kind of make those two distinctions. So In when it's all said and done, as of today, we've spent about $11.7 million on the Zion's Crossroads project between all the initial, you know, design, engineering, construction phase services. Construction phase services are, you know, we have inspectors inspecting all the work that the contractors are doing. We've got engineers that are doing the administrative piece, working between all the different components. And then we got the construction component, which is we built, you know, we had a separate contract for the elevated storage tank. We had a separate contract and contractor for the water booster station and the wastewater pump station. We had a separate contractor for the water and all the force mains and some other things. So that was the bulk of it, the construction piece. But so again, to date, we spent $11.77 million, a little under $11.8 million on the Zion's Crossroads project. Now we know that original project is not 100% done. It's pretty darn close to being done, though. We had our contractor that went into bankruptcy and didn't finish the project for us to the terms that we wanted. But because of that, we had setback. We held back some funding from that. So, and I'll kind of talk about the funding and kind of what's left on the next page. And then again, for the Zion's Crossroads West extension, we've spent about $170,000 year to date on basically design pieces of that project.
Say again, the west part is what?
The west part is from building the water line from the memory lane, from 250 and memory lane, going down to the Beaver Dam, where the homes had petroleum.
The 170.99, is that our money
I'll show you on the next page kind of where the sources of money come from. But to answer your question really quick, we got $200,000 from DEQ for engineering, so that's all DEQ money. So those are the costs to date on the project. So when you look at the source of funds, so again, for the original project, we got $12.2 million in funding. So early on, the board put in about a little over $800,000 of general fund money into the project, into the Zion's Crossroads project. We've also taken out two different rounds of debt proceeds. One was in 2017 for the original component of the project. That was $8.6 million. And from that $8.6 million, we also earned interest during that time of about $400,000. So the proceeds plus the interest go towards the project. In addition, in 2020, once all the project costs came in, there was an original discussion when this project came about that the board was going to put some general fund money into the project, around $2 to $3 million. Well, in 2020, when kind of COVID hit, interest rates were really low, the board made the decision to say, well, you know what, we don't want to use general fund money to put in the project. We're going to go out and take out debt proceeds for the project, because so the interest rate on each one of these, the interest rate on the original 2017 was 3%. The interest rate on the 2020 was 1.9% for what we took out.
And another thing was, with COVID, we weren't sure what our income was.
We
wanted to hold on to the cash that we had.
There was some uncertainty. And so when you look at the 2020 proceeds, I've got it broken up into $500,000 for the Zions Phase 2 project, and then $2.3 towards the original project, because that was the intent. The board said, we want to use a good portion of the money towards to finish off the Zions project, not use general fund money. But we also, originally, that whole extension was going to be $1.5 million. That was the original estimate to do the project pre-COVID. So we got $2.2 million in original funds. We have $1.5 million in West extension funds, $500 from county debt proceeds. Then we got $1 million from DEQ to go towards that project. And of the project, we've only utilized $170,000 out of that $200,000. So right now, remaining on the original project, we have $435,000 that's left over to complete the project. If you remember, on the original project, mostly it's a lot of grading and excavation stuff that needs to be done. And when I say excavation, it needs to be regraded because the contractor that finished the job didn't do it per the specs and plans of the job. And we've got a little issue with one of the pipes west of the Department of Corrections too. There's a really small leak in there, so there's gonna have to be some attention to that. But I think we talked before about this when the project didn't get completed to final completion by the one contractor, we knew there was going to be some work that needed to be done, and we held money out for that. So again, we have $435 remaining. I don't have a strong estimation, but I'm going to throw $300,000 in there from an estimation to complete the project. So there may be some funding, or we may just come in right at $435,000 from what we kind of held back from the project from the original contractor to finish out some of the remaining punch list items. That's pretty much what's left of the original project. You know, we've got people hooking into the system right now as we speak. We have water in the lines. We have water in the tank. The system's working. We have a small little leak in one of the pipes in one area, but everything else is mostly just punch list, grading. We got some fence. We have a couple trees in some areas. We've sent out letters to some of the property owners on the original project. Going to the West extension, again, we got $1.5 million. Last year, I gave the board the news that we didn't get the grant through the Virginia Department of Health. And at the time, the board said, well, we want to continue to use general fund money to move forward with the project. We're still kind of moving, trying to get some of the design stuff done, but we've been really trying to focus kind of staff's efforts to get the original project to 100% completion. So we haven't moved a whole ton on the West extension. With that being said, though, I've submitted another grant application through VDH. And so we're going to see. I submitted for $2 million for funding to go towards the project. So I'm hoping, from a timing standpoint, we're working to get the original project done, and by the time we're kind of done with that, and as the West is kind of moving forward, you know, hopefully we'll get some indication of if we get grant funding. Again, the board said probably, I think it was about September or October of last year, you know, that they would want to move forward with general fund money to do that. I would certainly like to see if we get grant funding, though, if it's possible, so we don't have to come out of general fund pocket. So that's just kind of an overview of the sources of funds we got for the project, the cost of the project, and just some estimates a little bit from potential revenues. And so you got these bullets on the right. I pulled up our GIS and I went through looking at assessed values of some of the different buildings. So some of these in this area, these ones represent, I didn't use the exact figures, but I used some estimates of some current buildings that we have up there in kind of that range. So those are the assessed values, and that's the kind of tax we're going to get from, that's kind of the tax we do get, real estate tax we get from those. We've got a 50,000 square foot industrial building going up that's up right now, right on Edgecombe. I don't know what the assessed value of that's going to be, but I can't imagine it's going to be any less than $5 million for certain. And so that's what the tax would be on that $5 million building. Looking at some of the corner of 250 and 15, you know, and also scanning some of my neighbors, my neighbor to the north a little bit, and some of the things that they have up on their side, looking at some buildings. So here are just some estimates of, you know, if we get some retail style buildings up on that corner, looking at what an assessed value could be for a building of those natures, maybe going up around, you know, up on the corner more. Again, these are not definitive values, but this is the type of real estate tax revenue it would bring into that. And then when you also look into that, besides the real estate tax revenue, you know, we're also going to have water and sewer connections. We're going to have water rates. And so most of these buildings, depending on what the user is, they're going to be probably mostly in between the 1 to 2 inch drain. So that ranges anywhere from a water and sewer connection between $34,000 combined to $126,000 combined. You know, some of these buildings may have business personal property. They may have machinery and tools. We just don't know what that is. But just on the business personal property side, you know, per $100,000 in value in that building is going to be $2,900 a year. And again, just looking at, I just did a quick pull on average fast food revenue in kind of the U.S. and $1.5 million a year was kind of the average. You know, certainly some of your big fast food chains, I think I saw up to $3 million a year. But anyway, just on a 1% of the sales tax of gross revenues could be $15,000 a year. So I guess what all this means is, just looking at this right column right here, you have probably about $100,000 in annual real estate tax revenue. Let's just say that these three buildings landed. Or if these three buildings landed, some of the buildings we already have, you know, you're looking at close to, yeah, 70 some thousand dollars a year. So right now we're paying our debt service on the proceeds we took out is about $725,000 a year. So the more we get these buildings and these people hooking into the systems, that's going to start to slowly offset that debt service payment that the county took out to build this. Again, you got the connection fees. The connection fees and the water and sewer rates, the model was built when we built the rates, and it's a long payback, but you're not necessarily, water and sewer systems aren't necessarily built to be the money makers. It's all the downhill things that come with it. It's the real estate tax, it's the sales tax, you know, is there a cigarette tax, is it the people and the jobs that get there, is it the people that are shopping more local in the businesses that may be there in Fluvanna County than driving to another locality to work and then spending your money in that locality. So I know that's kind of a high level overview of revenues, but
so the original model that was built, if I recall, and I don't know
whether you were here or not then at that point in time, but we basically had like a, for the ZXR project, a 5-year, you know, fast growth assumption, medium growth assumption, high growth assumption. And the fast growth assumption basically came in and said our payback was, you know, between 5 and 8 years, and the short growth assumption was our payback was between 20 and 25 years, if I recall, something like that.
I'm sure that
spreadsheet still exists out there.
Yeah, I'm sure it's out there. I wasn't a part of that process at the time, but I vaguely remember some of that.
There was a lot of discussion around that when the whole ZXR project was coming up. And so it was a pretty good spreadsheet. I mean, you could certainly, it would be fun to compare what A, the original estimated costs were, and then B, you know, how that trend line works in terms of the projection for the payback return.
Yeah.
And to that, what was the original amount?
The original amount of what?
Estimated amount of the cost.
I think it was lower.
No, it was lower, but it didn't include it. And I've got something here too, because I
there was stuff that was not expected. I can't remember what.
I thought it was about eight million,
but then it.
Here was the original estimated construction cost. This is just construction cost. Mm-hmm. Now I don't know going way back when, but when the project started, the original construction cost was $9.8 million. Now that's just construction. That doesn't include the construction phase services, like having
land,
engineers, you know, working on the project, engineers inspecting the project. That does not include easement acquisitions. You know, easement acquisitions going back. You know, we spent a little over $500,000 on easement acquisitions and buying property.
And was that not part of the original estimated budget, like easement acquisition? Does that put
no,
in the estimated cost of the...
I don't... I'll have to go back and look at the original budget, but...
I don't... I mean, I know... I remember the one thing that I do remember. I feel like it was around the $6 to $7 million mark was the estimated budget. But I distinctly remember Keith Smith saying to me, it's going to cost you $10 million. Yeah, I was like, it's just going to cost you $10 million.
Yeah, I don't...
No. I just don't remember that conversation.
If $6 million, that was absolutely the first number mentioned to us. Because I'm telling you, I remember it was 10 or 11. I thought 8 was there for a while.
8 was there for a while. Yeah, 8 was there for a while.
But then when you added all the things up, it was 10 to 11.
No, yeah, I do remember kind of like 8, but I think it started off a little less than that. So
I have one number
compared to...
I've got Bobby over there.
So construction, if it was estimated 8.9, where did we come in again at 8.9?
So it was estimated at, hold on, let me go back. It was estimated at 9.8.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So if you see right here, go here, it was estimated at 9.8. We came in at 8.8. So we came in $1 million under. So what was budgeted, the contractor that was on the project came in low, but didn't necessarily finish the project to final completion. Yeah.
Bobby has something.
Actually, I worked with Wayne on that revenue ROI return on investment thing, and we had several meetings with that. And I believe you are correct in about 6.8, 6.7, I think, is what we came up with the original construction cost. We did not put in, because it's an unknown, we were hoping that we could use right-of-way from VDOT, and that didn't come to fruition, and that's after I left. So that's why that cost wasn't put in there, just to give you some reference. And then we didn't put in the engineering costs, for that was just for construction of the facilities in that original return on investment.
Great, thanks for that clarification. You're right, it was called an ROI. I think it was a ZXR ROI or something like that.
Yes.
I'll see if I can find that.
I don't want to overburden it with too many questions. I wondered how come, I would have thought this would have been a part of our board packet, because I wanted to study this before we got here.
Because I will tell you, I was finishing it today. Finishing it today, and sometimes from a presentation standpoint, sometimes the presentation's not part of the board package.
Okay. Can you send this to us separately then?
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, and usually these presentations like this, supplemental presentations, go online too after they've been
Oh, okay.
Well, and the other thing too is, I don't know, like, when the estimate was done, I think it was still 3 years after that before the board even approved it, if I recall. Like, the estimates were being done, there was a lot of conversation, but I still think it was like 3 years after that. And Bobby may, Mr. Popowitz may remember that or not, but I feel like it was at least 3 years after the conversation was started. So I know that I was not on the board, so it was 2012.
So the preliminary engineering report, so the board back then in March 2015, well, probably before that, they hired RK&K to do a preliminary engineering report for the project. That was in 2015.
So, right, and this is 2012.
And so the ROI must have been
done in 2012. Yeah.
2013,
I think, yeah.
I think it was before that, because I remember having the conversations before I was a board member. We were elected in December, in November 2013, or
12.
Yeah,
we came on in 12.
So I mean, the project was ramping up for a really long time, and again, we didn't take out debt proceeds for the project until 2017.
Right, and so then at that point, you know, the original estimate is no longer applicable because you can add 8% to your original estimates on construction costs at least, you know, per year.
But would you all have not, when the board agreed to it, would you have not asked for?
I think that's probably when it went from what I was saying, the original, like what the ROI showed, $6 million, to the $8 million, you know, and then from the $8 million to the $10 million, you know, and that, again, part, you know, COVID, part everything else. So, I mean, I think anytime you look at a long-term construction project like this, you got to factor in.
I think when the project originally started, again, I wasn't really part of that, but when the project originally started to when it kind of finally came to fruition, I mean, you know, you're talking 3 to 4 years before it actually.
We were worried about the Louisa, our joint project first, and then it became a thing of, you know what, by the time that board gets there, we better have our pipes in the ground.
Yeah. So.
So did you say this will be online? Because somebody asked me that.
Yeah. Yep. So, like I said, I'm happy to answer any other questions for the board. And again, this is the current estimate. This is to date. Now, that doesn't mean that's what the final is going to be. But again, I'm pushing for that final not to be above that 12.2. That's for sure. And we're continuing to earn interest on what we have left of the 2020 proceeds. Again, we're not earning a lot. I think we're earning about $4,000 a month right now.
Will you make a report on the James River project?
I can, yeah.
That's a sadder story.
But again.
I'm sure I'd be able to put in some soil or something.
So I will say this. The project, without going too deep in the weeds, the JRWA project team is we're working to come up with the project costs right now.
Okay.
And I know I've presented before to the board what the projected cost was going to be, and I'm not liking some of the initial numbers I'm seeing. So we're trying to whittle them down.
That was passed in 2012, I think the original was with the JRWA.
I think the original JRWA was estimated to be no more than $10 million, probably.
No, I think it was estimated to be something like $3 million, of which we were going to pay $1.5 million.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be that.
Okay. Yeah. Any other questions? Well, thank you, Eric.
Yep.
We have the consent agenda. The minutes of June.
Minus I.
I circled, but I'm not going to read that. But minutes of June 7, 2023. H, accounts payable report for May 2023. Purchase agreement with James River Equipment for the backhoe. K, county EMS supervisor position description updating LDOT secondary road acceptance. Anyone want to pull anything? If not, can we have someone to?
Somebody.
All right, do we have a second? Motion by Mr. Sheridan, second by Mr. O'Brien. Do we accept the consent agenda? All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Unfinished business, do we have anything? New business?
I have somebody asking about the trees at the Vaughn property, or the setback landscaping at the Vaughn property.
On 15.
Yeah, we've sent a letter to Mr. Vaughn about coming up with a concept plan for what he plans to.
Sketch plan.
Yeah.
Basically, that would lay out his landscaping, berm buffers, all that.
What he's planning on doing since there's no trees there.
So was there, that was a mistake?
Indirect mistake on his part, yes.
Okay.
But it's correctable.
It's correctable, okay.
Well.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. I mean, landscaping can go there. You can't necessarily put the trees that were there back.
Right, no, right.
The trees that were there were not going to block a lot because it was hardwoods.
Right, and they also were somewhat underneath the.
But yeah, but that's.
Power line.
Yeah, but that's what's going on with that. We've sent him a formal letter.
Right, and yeah, we've had a lot of questions, so it's good to have the discussion.
And he maintained the 60-foot buffer on the other three sides that, you know, we've asked him to provide a measurement for that and also provide the sketch plan, submit all from Bowman or his whatever engineering chooses.
And as long as he corrects it by landscape buffer or the, what's it, like a mound or something? What's he gonna?
Yeah, it would be a berm. If you, like, for instance, if you ever are over on Salem Church Road with the CVAC training center and everything and the CVAC offices, be a much larger version of that. I always tell people it's a shame that people can't see that from 15 because it's a beautiful buffer.
But again, yeah, they would put a berm, then they'd have landscaping on top of the.
Around it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as long as he does that, there's no penalty of any type, is that right?
Correct.
Well, like I said, he didn't violate the ordinance, because the ordinance tells you you have to clear the mature vegetation, you have to put the landscape. The mature vegetation would have been a bonus for him to keep, and then he would supplement the landscape.
Oh, I see. So he would. So he's really not in violation.
Yes, he's right. Technically, we discussed it. He's technically not in violation. However,
right.
We feel that he just needs to go forward in good faith and show me all that
he is certainly, I mean, there's going to be some increased costs.
He also made a profit. He took the trees down, so they used that money to
reinvest. Yes, sir.
To reinvest it to do the other.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Now we're going to open a second public comments. If you have to, would like to talk to the board, please come and give your name and address and address the board. And you have 5 minutes. Anyone would like to speak to the board? Anyone online?
There is one person unmuted.
Okay.
I don't know.
It's not the same gentleman who's with them.
No, it's Ms. Ford. She's not speaking.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay. Anyone online, please unmute and let us know you want to speak. All right. I don't think so. All right. I will close the second public comments.
Madam Chair, I move the Atlantic County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to provision of Section 2.2-3711A3 and Section 2.2-3711A8 of the Code of Virginia 1953. As amended for the purpose of discussing real estate acquisition, and legal matters, contract user credit, master of the water and sewer ordinance.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Wright, second by Mrs. Ziegler. We go into the closed session.
Madam Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from the open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950, as amended, and two, only such public business matters that were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Okay, we have a second.
Second.
Okay, motion by Mr. Bryant and second by Mrs. Sheridan. Ms. Sheridan?
Aye.
Mrs. Ada?
Aye.
Mr. Bryant?
Aye.
Mr. Fairchild? Chair, both.
She's playing TikTok there.
All right, we have a motion to adjourn.
We do.
All right,
second.
Motion by Ms. Fairchild to adjourn, second by Mrs. Sheridan. And all, anybody disagree? Everybody agree?